Vulcan, which means carbonus. Yeah, the sceptre on it, actually, I think it's called, the sceptre called it the sceptre carbonus. Yeah, basically the whole mesecta is talking about carbonus. No idea. All right, so we're holding nine lines from the bottom of the word Bahare, the line we can get to, Chavdalat on the base. So, okay, we're in the middle of a discussion like this. We said in the Mishnah that Rav Shimon had said that if the Kohen does Kabbalah of the blood, by holding the Mizrach in his left hand, then the Korban is still kosher. So we were discussing, so the Gemara had been discussing all the ins and outs of when do we say it's kosher and when not. Rav Shimon does agree that there are certain avodas that have to be done with the right hand, and if it's done with the left hand, they'll be possible. And then there were others were saying that, so we were saying a rule as follows. According to the Chachamim, if it says in connection with a korban, either the word espa, that it has to be done with the finger, or the word hakoyin, or hakoyanim, then it means it has to be done with the right hand. Provided we said that it's something that the Gemara said another provision, even according to Chachamim, it has to be something that is essential to the kapara, davama akiv the kapara. So, for example, carrying the evarim of the korban to the kevesh, to the ramp of the mizbeach, that you could do with your left hand. In fact, the Mishnah in Talmud says that when all the korbanim lined up over there with the pieces of the oila, with the pieces of the korban talmud that they bring to the mizbeach, so some of them are holding one thing in their right hand and another thing in their left.
The lights are over there, in there.
So we said that halacha of the evarim is not essential to the validity of the carbon of the blood. Well, that's the thing. So we discussed then that halacha. So now halacha, the pasuk says that you have a pasuk that says that the kohen should take the blood be'etzvoi with its finger of a nasan, and he should place it on the corners of the mizbeach. So part of the discussion was: does the word be'etzvoi with his finger refer back to v'lokach? Which would mean, therefore, that the lakicha, meaning the Kabbalah, has to be done with the right hand. That's what the Chachamim hold. Whereas Rav Shimon would say that no, it refers to the following. It refers to the following thing. But not that. When it comes to the placing of the blood, daubing it on the four corners of the mizbeach, that has to be done with the right hand. The Chachamim would say that as well as the Kabbalah. It applies to both. And we have Rav Elazar ben Shimon, who says that it depends what the exact wording in the pasuk is by each individual korban. Anyway, the point is that we were saying that according to Rav Shimon, you need to say both. You need to say etzba and you need to say hakoyin or hakoyanim. Otherwise, if it only says one or the other, then you could indeed do it with the left hand.
And if you do it with both hands.
What do you mean both hands? What are you doing?
Are you taking
both hands? So it's fine. Okay, so there you have. So according to Rav Shimon, for sure, it would be fine. According to the Chachamim, you get into a question of mistayeya. You get into a question, is the left hand accomplishing something that the right hand wouldn't have been able to do it by itself? That's called mistayeya. And then you have, the Gemara mentions in some places, mistayeya in Beimamish, that mistayeya is not considered something significant, but it really depends. Is it that you could have held it with the right hand alone, and you're helping stabilize it with the left hand, or is it you couldn't have held it with the right hand at all? In that case, it would still be possible, because it has to be that you're holding it primarily with your right. All right. But anyway, the point is that we were in the middle of discussing, according to Rav Shimon, what would we say, which avoiders do we say, does it say have to be done with the right hand versus which ones can be done with the left? So we're up to, so that's where we're up to, nine lines from the bottom of Dalit on the day. So come on, the Harim Zrika. What about then the Zrika, the sprinkling of the blood of most Korbanos? Again, you have the Chatas. The Kohen dips his finger in and daubs it on each of the individual four corners in there. That the pasuk explicitly says, says the word HaKohen and the word Be'etzvoi. So there's no question there that Rav Shimon would say it has to be done with the right hand. But most other korbanos, you do Zrika, you take the basin, or you take the mizrach full of blood and splash it on the corners or on the sides, as the case may be, of the mizrach. So consider Zrika, the lakos of Uelek Kohona. There, the pasuk only mentions the word kohen. It doesn't use the word. It doesn't use the word etzba, utnan. And yet we say in the Mishnah, zorach b'smel pasul. Our Mishnah said that if you did the zrika with your left hand, it's pasul. Well, I call it Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon is not disagreeing with that. Now, why not? According to the rule that we established that he says, or it has to say Esra and Kohen in order for it to have to be done with the right hand, then it should be. The answer is, Amar Abayah, holding the Braisa. Abayah says, as a matter of fact, Rav Shimon does disagree with it in a Braisa. True, in the Mishnah he doesn't say anything, but in a Braisa we see that he also holds that.
What?
For whatever reason, Rebbe didn't choose to put his opinion into the Mishnah. But you can find his opinion in a Braisa. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Kibbutz the smoke, kosher, for Rav Shimon Machzir. If you receive the blood with your left hand, then it's kosher, and Rav Shimon says it's kosher, that we have in the Mishnah. Zorach the smoke, kosher, for Rav Shimon Machzir. And the same thing is true as far as the Zrika, that the Chachamim would say it's kosher, and Rav Shimon would say it's kosher. Okay, Tosfos has a bit of discussion about that, because we mentioned in the first paragraph that you have a hekesh, those hatorah, la'ola, la'minkal, etc., where you have a hekesh between all the different types of karbanos. If we know by a chassas it has to be done with his right finger, because the pasuk says so, the locha, chachoyin, midama, chassas, that's boy, the nosan, so there it clearly has to be with his right finger, why would... Because Rav Shimon agrees, the Gemara I discussed before, that Rav Shimon does agree that when it says Esba, then it means the right, it means the finger of the right hand. We learn it by Xeda Shava from the Torah. He says, though, that in order for it to be Ma'akiv, it has to say not only the word Esba, but also the word Hakoyim. Well, it has to also say the word Hakoyim, or Hakoyim.
To
be Ma'akiv. It has, primarily, it says that, what we said in the Gemara, no. If it says Esba, then we said according to the Shimon also, it's not that it's either Esba or Koyin, like the Chachamim said. If it has to say Esba. If it says Esba, then it means it has to be the right finger on the basis of that Zeva Shalom. If it doesn't say Esba, then it doesn't matter whether it says Hakoyin.
Wait a minute.
The word Hakoyin in the Pasuk, whether it says up Hakoyin, has to do it. If the Pasuk says the word Hakoyin, the Chachamim learn that if it says either Esba or Hakoyin, then it means that it has to be done with the right hand, and if it's done with the left hand, it's possible. And Rav Shimon says, as long as it says Esba, that's enough, and we don't care whether it says the word Hakoyin. The word Hakoyin teaches us he has to be wearing big dick or not.
So,
yeah.
To be on the right, according to Rav Shimon, it has to say Esba.
It has to say Esba.
But to be
ma'akiv. No, that's what it means. As long as it says Esba, it means it's ma'akiv. It's not done. The Chachamim would say whether it says Esba or it says Koyim.
It's well.
Then it has to be with the right hand, it's done with the left hand as possible.
It's not.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about the more than this. It's a long Tosfos up here. You can see that runs over the bottom half of this Talmud and most of the next Talmud that goes through all the ins and outs of. Would we say that that's the case, that Rav Shimon would say that there's a distinction in that between a chassas and all the korbanos? But a chassas, he would say, because it says Esba, it means dafka, the right finger, as opposed to all the other ones it doesn't, and therefore it would mean either hand. But what about the hekesh of Zoyt HaTorah? The Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the possibility that maybe Zoyt HaTorah la'olamim kavala chassas la'olshem. So there's a hekesh between the chassas and the other korbanos. Yeah. The Tosfos gets into a discussion that maybe instead of the girsa over here in the Gemara being zrika, maybe the girsa should be malika. This that you do to a bird carbon, an oilo, a chassa, that the Kohen takes his fingernail and nips through its neck with his fingernail instead of doing shvita with a knife, maybe the correct girsa over here in the Gemara should not be zrika, but rather malika. That Rav Shimon would say that if he did malika with the left hand, then it would be kosher. Because instead of zrika, Tosfos brings the girsa malika.
They
brought that girsa, and then they discuss it. So then the whole rest of the Tosfos deals with the ins and outs of can we say that or not? Can we say that Rav Shimon would say that zrika by the other korbanos is kosher with the left hand as all Gemara has it? Could we say that he says malika is kosher with the left hand as this girsa? Yeah. Fine. What about Elahad Amar Rava? Okay, but what about this that Rava says like this? Yad l'kmita. We have a gzeira shava on the word yad, which teaches us as far as kmita of a korban mincha that it has to be done with the right hand. Namely, by the mitzora, it says that the kohen places the blood and it places blood from the korban and the oil that he brings along with the korban. The kohen puts a little bit of it on his, among other places, on the thumb of his right hand. So boy and yodeh hayamonis. So there it says the word yad, and clearly specifies it's the right one, yodeh hayamonis. Then Rava says the reason why it says yad is to teach us by Xeda Shava yad de kmitza. That where it's that kmitza, where the prophet also says yad, actually says yad, Kass, or whatever, the Gemara in Menachos explains how exactly we learn the Gzeira Shavah, but whatever, that Knitzah therefore also has to be done with the right hand. Knitzah is with the Kohen Mincha, where the Kohen scoops out a handful of it and then takes it and burns it on the Mizeah. Yeah, Rashi explains in various places that it means to use the middle three fingers of the hand to scoop it out, and use the two fingers on the side to brush off any extra. But Amman seems to understand it means four fingers, and you brush it off at the thumb, whatever. The point is, that's how you do it. You scoop out a handful of them in. So you put it in a kli shoris, and you go and burn it on the mizeach. Those four avodas correspond to the four avodas with an animal carbon. So Rava says the reason why it says yad in connection with the Masorah, we didn't have to say it because we sort of understood otherwise that it means his right hand. So therefore that, because the word, among other things, the word boyan itself means a thumb. So therefore it's meant to give us a greater shava to teach us that smith has to be done with the right hand. Regal, the reason why it has to say regal in connection with the Masorah is to teach us a greater shava regal lachalitza, is to teach us that when it comes to chalitza, where it also says the word regal, the chalpanale me'al ragloi, it has to be dafke his right foot. And oizen l'rutsiya, what? His foot. The chalpan na'aloi me'al ragloi, she takes his shoe, she, Yavama, takes the shoe off the Yavama's foot. But it has to be doctor. We wouldn't know from that topic alone which foot, whether the right foot or the left foot. We have a Zeta Shovel from the Masorah, that means the right foot doctor. Yeah. So it says Rego by one and it says Rego by the other. Yeah, fine. Maybe it's the way, maybe not. No. That's the point of the Zeta Shovel. And oizen l'rutsiya. And Rava says the reason why it says the word oizen in connection with the Masorah is to teach us Gzeira Shava that rutsiya, that when you pierce the ear of an Eved Ivri, if he doesn't want to go free after 6 years, then it also has to be in the right ear, right? So according to that, lomali, according to all of this that we were saying before, why does it have to say yad in connection with Shemitah for us to learn Gzeira Shava? Midirava Baba Hananaka. Based on the rule we said before, that whenever it says espa or whenever it says koyin, it means, according to the chachamim, it means it has to be done with the right hand. Then we know already, according to the chachamim, it has to be done with the right hand. We don't need a zeta shava from the word yad.
We know it from
Rabbi Baba Chana's rule that the Gemara had said before, that according to the chachamim, any time by a korban, it says the word espa or it says the word koyin, it means it has to be done with the right hand. Never mind. No, the point is, once we have that limud, then why do we need the Gzeira Shavah from the word yad?
He got that rule.
This is how he learned the Kabbalah. That's from his Rebbe. Amar Rabba Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Kol Mokam Shenema Espo Korna Eina El Yamin. We're saying, he's explaining that that's what the Chachamim holds. The Chachamim against Rav Shimon, where Rav Shimon says that the important thing is it says Espa, never mind whether it says Koyan or not, but so Rabbi Baba Chana is telling us in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that that's the rule. It says Esba or it says Koyin. Now by the Mincha, it said by the Kmitza of the Mincha, it says the word Koyin. Automatically, therefore, that tells us it has to be done with the right hand. So why do you need the Gzeira Shavah from the Masorah to tell us? Well, that's the question.
I'll teach for that.
The answer is Chad L'Koymetz v'Chad L'Kiddush Koymetz. Yes, but we need two different limudim. One to teach us that the Kmitza itself has to be done with the right hand, and the other one to teach us that when you place the koymet into a kli sharis, which is the equivalent of Kabbalah with the blood of a korban, that also has to be done. The keli itself has to be in his right hand, which means, by the way, you need two koyanim. You have one koyan take the koymet out of the mincha, another koyan is standing over there holding a kli sharis in his right hand, and the first koyan takes the koymet and puts it into that kli sharis, which is the equivalent of Kabbalah. And now, they take that and they walk it over to the mizeach and they go and burn it on the mizeach.
Let me ask you a question, a simple question. We discussed the thing sometimes the left-handed
is a Baal Mom. Yeah.
Couldn't you induce from that? Obviously, then all the other has to be with the right
hand. No. According to Rav Shimon, a certain avodah can be done with the left hand, as long as the pasuk doesn't say esra. Why not? I mean, all of us here are righties, I think, but we all there are certain things we still do with our left hand. You sit at a table. You don't hold your knife and your fork with your right hand. You hold one in your right, one in your left. And sometimes, for whatever reason, you do things with your left hand rather than doing it with your right to begin with. So that explains it then. We need Rabbi Baba Chana's limud from the word koyin to say that the kmitza itself needs to be done with the right hand. We need, there's a greater shavuot from the word yad to teach us that also the kiddush koimet, but also placing the koimet into the keli, also the keli has to be held in the right. Okay, the question is, well, if Shimon delay boy kiddush, fine, what about a delay boy kiddush koimet? What about according to Shimon who doesn't require kiddush koimet at all? According to him, as we learned back in the first paragraph, it is possible to just take the koimet from the mincha and hold it in your hand and walk it over to the mizbeach and throw it into the fire. It's not necessary, he says, to put it in a keli. And furthermore, right. Or Ulamanda Amalar Shimon Nami Boy Kiddush Koimet the Smolach Shuri Machshir, and you have another opinion who in Menachos trying to understand what Rav Shimon has said. You have an opinion among the Amoraim over there who say that Rav Shimon agrees that it needs to be put in a keli, but he holds that. All it is is that he holds after you put it in the keli, you're allowed to take it out from there and put it directly on the mizbeach. And that opinion holds that the small Akshuri Machshir, he holds that Rav Shimon would say that it is kosher if you put it in the left hand, if you held the keli in your left hand. Because again, the same way as he said in our Mishnah, the Kabbalah Saddam, you can be holding the keli, the Mizrach, in your left hand. He would say the same thing as far as the Kiddush Kaimet. So then according to him, Yod Yod the Rava Lava. Then what is he doing with Rava's Zera Shava from the word Yad? We don't find that anybody disagreeing with that. If you're going to say, well, that's the question. What is he going to do with it? If he holds that either according to the two different ways of understanding Rosh Hashanah's opinion, either the koimetz does not have to be placed in a keli at all, or it does, but the keli can be held in his left hand, then what's he doing with his Zera Shava?
Why would he have to do something with
because
it?
Because he has his Zera Shava. What's he going to do with it? What do you mean?
If he doesn't hold that
Zera Shava, then we have to find something to that effect. We have to find something indicating that he doesn't hold of it. And the question is, Ila Kmitza Asma. So you're going to tell me that Rav Shimon uses the Gzeira Shava to teach us that the Kmitza itself has to be done with the right hand? You don't need that. Midi Rav Yehuda Breda Rav Chia Nafka. We can learn that from what Rav Yehuda Breda Rav Chia said. The Alma Rav Yehuda Breda Rav Chia, my time is Rav Shimon. What was Rav Shimon's reason where we said there that he doesn't say that the Kmitza has to be placed in a keli? Why is that? Because the Omakra Kodesh Kodoshim he kachatas the Farsham, because the Pasuk says about a Kohen Mincha that it is Kodesh Kodoshim, like the Chatas and like the Osham. Now why the double comparison? Either you compare it to a Chatas or an Osham, both of them are Kodesh Kodoshim. What's the point? It means Bola Ovda Biyad Ovda Bimin Chatas means if the Kohen chooses to do the Avodah with his bare hand, if he chooses after taking the Kohen in his hand, which that he for sure has to use his hand for, if after that he chooses to take that koimet in his hand and walk it up to the mizbeach and throw it in, then it has to be like a chatas in the sense that he has to do it with his right hand, because as we said before, Rav Shimon agrees that the putting of the blood of a chatas has to be with his right hand. Bala oyv bekli. On the other hand, if he comes to do it in a keli, if he puts it in a keli, like the chachamim say you have to, then oyv besmel kasha, that he could do it with his left hand just as you would be able to do with an asha.
The question being?
So the point is, so sort of Shimon knows already that the kmitza itself has to be done with the right hand. He learns it from that. He learns it from this comparison to the chatas to the chatas and to the asham. Because what he's saying is anything that's done with the hand, anything with a mincha that's done with the hand has to be done with the right hand. Well, since the kmitza by definition is done with the hand, then it means he says it has to be done with the right hand. So he knows that. So what is he using Rava Zeta Shava of Yad Yad for? Fine, we're not talking about taking off the bits. We're talking about the actual kmitza, the actual scooping into the flour and scooping out a handful. That's done with his hand, and if Shimon agrees, it has to be with his right hand. Because he's saying anything with the mincha that's done directly with the hand has to be the right hand. That's why he's saying if you walk it over to the mizbeach, still held in his hand, then it has to be his right hand. Rav Shimon is saying, when it comes to walking the kmitza over to the mizbeach and throwing it into the fire, you have your choice. You can do it with your bare hand, but in that case, it has to be the right hand, or you can take it in a kli sharis, and in that case, you can hold the kli sharis in your left hand. In other words, Rav Shimon says, anything that takes place with the mincha, if you're doing it directly with your hand, then it has to be in that sense like a chatas. It has to be done with the right hand. Well, then that means he holds the kmitza has to be done with the right hand. So he knows it from that. He doesn't need Rava Zera Shava. So what is he using Rava Zera Shava from Yad Yad for?
So, I mean, you say,
as opposed to the Chachamim, who hold on, the Chachamim hold that the comparison of mincha to a chatas and an asham is meant for a different purpose that we talked about in the first parak, that it has to do with the question of the Shema and Shalom the Shema. So therefore, so according to them, all the avodas have to be, the kmitza has to be done with the right hand, and there's no option of doing it with the left hand. So they use the Gzeder Shavah Yad Yad to teach us that. So yeah, according to Reb Shimon, what are we doing? The answer is, Linyat Tzuchalala Kaimat Minchas Choyte. Yes, but Reb Shimon would say, you still need Rabbi Gzeder Shavah to teach us about a Minchas Choyte, about a Mincha that's being brought by a person who did an Avera, namely as well as a Korban Olav Yerek, where he's extremely poor, and all he can afford, instead of a sheep or instead of birds, is a Korban Mincha. Now, why do we need a special pasuk for that case? Sakra Adachamina, because you would think to say like this: Hoyol va'omer Reb Shimon shlo yehei korbanu mehoder. Since Reb Shimon says that, Reb Shimon says like this, you would think if you didn't have the pasuk saying otherwise, you would think that a chote when he brings his korban should be bringing oil with it. Besides the flour, he should be bringing oil. He should be bringing lavona, because why should he gain? Why should it be? Because he did an aveda, we're going to make him bring a lesser mincha than a regular person. We should make him bring a mincha that's worth at least as much as the average person's mincha. The reason why we don't is shelo yehei korban mehoder. The reason is because the Torah didn't want that his korban should be beautiful, that it shouldn't be beautified with oil, and it shouldn't be beautified with lavona. So given that Reb Shimon is saying that, maybe it means, therefore, that we don't care so much about the Minchas Chote as opposed to other kinds of korbanos. Ki koma flob a smel nami tiskasher. It should be maybe kosher even if he did it with his left hand, with the koimet. Kamash malon, and that is why we need the Gzeder Shavah, yad yad, to tell us no. The koimet always has to be done with the right hand. What happens after that depends.
Including
even a Minchas Chote.
It's a pretty low-level need.
Okay, but nevertheless, we still need it. So the bottom line, what we have so far is...
You need it.
Okay, we said like this. First of all, Reb Shimon says that any time that it doesn't say the word etzba, then it means it can be done with the left hand. And therefore, we even find them arguing about zrika, because by zrika, it doesn't say etzba either. Then we said, what about the Zeta Shava? According to the Chachamim, the Zeta Shava from Yad versus the limud from Kol Mokam Shenema Espo Korona teaches us the one that the Knitza has to be done with the right hand, and the other that the Kiddush Koymet has to be done with the Keli held in the right hand. According to Reb Shimon, it teaches us one that the Knitza has to be done with the right hand, and the other that's true even of a Minchas Chote.
But not
the Kiddush Koymet, because either he holds Kiddush Koymet doesn't have to be done at all, or he holds if it's done, it can be done on a Keli held in the left hand.
And where is the second? Shabbat,
so we have the one yad is by Masora, the other yad is by the Kmitza.
It's a
Pratik Mo doesn't discuss over here whether it's Mufna, but I don't know if in Menachas it discusses it, but yeah.
We're not using it for two things.
We're using it that not only the Koymet, but also the Kiddush Koymet. Hello? Has to be done with the right hand. And according to Reb Shimon, again, according to the Chachamim, we have two lemudim. According to Reb Shimon, we also have two lemudim.
What are the two?
The two are one from the Gzeder Shavah Yad Yad, and the other from Kodesh Kadoshim Hika Chassas V'Chashem, that in a certain sense, a mincha is like a chassas and has to be done with the right hand.
Oh, and both of that is from the Gzeder
Shavah? One is the Gzeder Shavah, and the other is a Hekish, Kodesh Kadoshim Hi, that a Kodesh Mincha is like a chassas and like an asham.
So they don't entertain the possibility that he just doesn't use the
Gzeira Shava? No, because unless he has it, he has to do something with the Gzeira Shava. Otherwise, the Gemara discusses in Menachah, but Rashi just mentions it over here. We don't go into the details, but Rashi mentions, the Gemara mentions over there, that the Pasuk didn't actually need to say explicitly the word Yad in connection with the Masorah, or the word Regal, or the word Oizen. We could have understood it, because you have a Parasha over there by a Masorah Osher and one by the Masorah Ozi, and the same rules apply to both. So all those three words are available for Gzeira Shava.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Fine. Mishnah says, Nishpach Adam al Aritzva, if the blood of the korban spilled directly onto the floor, in other words, it wasn't caught in the keli, it gushed directly from the neck of the animal onto the floor, v'atzva, and then he gathered it up, possible, then it's possible that the korban is possible and that blood can't be sprinkled. As opposed to, we'll learn the next parak, if it was caught in the keli, and then he dropped the keli and spilled it, then he can gather it up again in his kosher.
But not if it drops
directly from the neck. So
if it drops in a keli, obviously some blood is going to splash.
That's not the first of all, no, we're going to say in the Gemara that you have to try to catch all the blood. But you have to aim to catch all the Dhamma Nefesh. But if you can't, you can. But you have to do what you can. But the point is that if it didn't get directly into the KV flows, then it's possible, which is what we're going to discuss in the Gemara.
What's the whole thing about the blood?
What do you mean, what's the whole thing about the blood? The blood is...
What's the whole thing about the blood?
Most things with the karbanos are chukim, but when it comes to the blood, the pasuk says in a few places, ki adam hu nefesh, the blood is the life force of the animal, and it's given as a kapara, nefesh tachas nefesh, the life of the animal instead of the life of the person. The famous explanation that many Rishonim give, that a person sees that all these various things are done to the behemoth, he should have in mind that these things should have been done by right to him for his averus, and instead Hashem is having rahmanas on him, whatever.
Or the chicken.
He would be full of blood.
Whatever, that's not the point. The point is that we know the blood of the korban has to be received in a keli and it has to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Whatever the exact reasons are, we're not getting into. I mean, ultimately, it's a chalik. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up on. We learn in a braisa. How do we know, first of all, which blood has to be caught? And second of all, how do we know this that we said in the Mishnah that it has to be caught into a keli? The pasuk says like this: "V'lokach ha'koyin ha'mashiach midam ha'par." The pasuk says the koyin ha'mashiach, the koyin gadol, should take from the blood of the par. This is the first time. This is the first type of chatos mentioned in the Torah. Meaning midam. Now midam ha'par on the face of it means some of the blood. But that, so what does it mean? First of all, it means midam ha'nefesh v'lo midam ha'ar. First of all, it means the blood of the nefesh, the actual blood with which the animal's life force goes out. So not the blood from the skin. Like this, when you start shechting, you first have the skin starts bleeding from the capillaries over there. That's not the blood you're supposed to be receiving in the cave. And also, you're supposed to be receiving only the dama nefesh. V'lo midam ha'tamsis, you're also not supposed to be receiving the blood that trickles out after. Like this, you have this blood that's bleeding from the skin as you cut through it. Then you get to the two simonim, the windpipe and the windpipe and the esophagus, the kana and the vashin. And also in the course of that, you get to the viridin, the veins and arteries and whatever that go through the neck. Then you have a huge gush of blood comes out. That's what you're supposed to be mekabel. After that main gush of blood, you have more drips out afterwards. That's called damatam.
You're not supposed to be blood.
Yeah. And when the pasuk says midam hapar, when it says from the blood of the par, doesn't mean you receive only some of the dama nefesh. You're supposed to be getting all of it, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. So what it means is midam hapar means dam hapar yikablenu. It means you have to receive the blood directly from the par. That's where we get the din in our Mishnah, therefore, that if the blood spilled on the floor, then it's possible because then it didn't go into the keli directly from the par itself. It landed on the floor first. That's what we're saying, because it has to be done there for
you, kablanu.
You
don't need to repeat it.
What? It means it has to be directly from the pan. And why is that? What makes us doubt in the public that way? If you're going to say it means only midam, can mean from, meaning some of the blood, meaning kedichtiv, means exactly what it sounds like, midam ba'afil mitzvah dam. So what would it mean? You can receive from the blood, meaning even only a little bit of it, and it's kosher? No. When you shech the carbon, you're supposed to receive all the blood, all the dama nefesh, that is, of the par, shenema v'es kol dama yishpach, as the pasuk says, all of its blood he should pour onto the yisod, to the mizbeach. So therefore, so it means he has to record all the blood in order to be able to pour all of it on the yisod.
What exactly is the question?
The question is like this. The word mem usually is a mute. It means some of, but not all of. But over here, if the word mi dama par was meant to be a mute, meaning only some of the blood, but not all of it, then what do you mean? That doesn't fit with the halacha that we know that you have to receive all the blood because you have another pasuk that says that's called dama yishvah. Ela midam ha'par, dam me ha'par yikablenu. So we have to understand the word midam ha'par, that the mem is referring to the word par. It means the blood has to be received directly from the par. Because Sava, the Tana of this Braisa, therefore holds a concept that we learned back in Bava Basra called Gurin Omei Sifin Vidoshin. We take letters from one word in a pasuk, and we attach them to a different word in a pasuk. Gurin, we subtract them from one word. Omei Sifin, we add them to a different word. Vidoshin, and we darshin the resulting thing. So like this, Mi Dam Hapar becomes Dam Me Hapar. So that's it.
Gurin
Omei Sifin Vidoshin. Good. Well, getting back to what we just said.
Is he the only one who thinks like that?
Well, you have such an opinion. I mean, we learned in Bava Basra a similar thing as far as a limud where we know that a husband inherits from his wife. Yeah, but a few places in chats where this concept is used. Gufa, getting back to what we said, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, a sheikh at Tzarech Sheikh Kabbalah is called Domish of Par. We said when you shech, you have to receive all the blood of the Par. Shenamav is called Dama Par Yishpah, because it says all the blood of the Par you should pour onto the Yisod. So the question is, what do you mean? Well, how about Shirayim? That pasuk is talking about pouring the Shirayim. It's not talking about the Kabbalah. So how can you tell me that pasuk is teaching us that the Kabbalah, you have to receive all the blood? The answer is in any Indian the Shirayim, because it obviously can't be referring to the Shirayim themselves, the Halesa Lekuladam, because at that point you don't have all the blood anymore, because some of it was either daubed or sprinkled on the Mizbeach. Because that's the whole point. You receive the blood, some Korbanos you do Shirayim Sheinah, so some of the blood has already been placed onto the two opposite corners of the Mizbeach. Some of them, like the chassas, you have the blood is applied individually to each of the four corners. Bechor and Meiser is Pesach, and Pesach is poured once. Whatever. The point is, some of the blood is already missing. By the time you come to Shvichas Shirayim, pouring out the rest of it onto the Yisod, you don't have all the blood there. So obviously, when the pasuk says that called Dama Yishpah, it can't mean all of the blood because some of it is already missing. Therefore, Tneo Inyan the Kabbalah. Therefore, you have to instead say that pasuk is actually teaching us about the Kabbalah, that you have to receive all the blood at the time of Kabbalah. So that's where we get the
even though it's
mentioned by Shirayim, but it's referring to Kabbalah of necessity. So that's where we learn that you have to receive all the blood. And not all. You have to catch as much as you can.
It's unnecessary.
Right.
No. Yeah, it's possible to get all the blood out because the second part of the blood is called Dharmatopsis.
No, but that's not the point. Anyway, the point is...
No,
you're not supposed to receive that.
No,
any blood that comes out after the initial gush is damatamsis. It's still ulcer, it's still blood, but you can't use it to sprinkle on them as there.
But damatamsis is also the 20th blood.
Yeah, damatamsis is anything other than that's not the original gush.
It's non-flowing blood.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but now that the animal checked it, it's not. Okay. All right. Okay. Here's another din we learned from these words. After the sheikhet has to hold the knife upward because you don't want that blood from the knife is going to land in the mizrach. You want that only the blood that gushed out of the animal's neck is going to land in the mizrach, not the blood that got onto the knife. Therefore, you need to hold the knife upward so that it's out of the way, so it doesn't go into the mizrach. Because the pasuk says you should take from the blood of the par, implying not from the blood of the par as well as from something else. If you let blood from the knife trickle into their altar, you'd have some blood from someplace else as well. So the question is, Adam stack in the mind mechanic place. Okay, so what are you supposed to wipe the blood from the knife? What are you supposed to wipe it off onto? You obviously have to, because you're going to be shechting another korban, and you know you don't want them to get mixed up, and you know the knife, the blood would get in the way of the next shechita or whatever, so what do you wipe it on? I'm going to buy a disfak mizra. You wipe the knife on the outside edge of the mizra. So not into it, where the blood would then go in. You wipe it on the outside edge, and that way it flows down on the outside.
Near the wound?
No, not near the wound. You're holding the mizrach full of blood. You take the knife, you scrape it off on the outside of the mizrach, on the outer metal edge of the mizrach, so that the blood runs down the side of it rather than into it. As we find in a couple of places in Sefer Ezra and in Divrei Yomim, where it refers to the mizrachos as to the mizrachim, it refers to them as kforei zahav. Kforei comes from a word that means to wipe off. That when we talk about kapara, when we talk about shetachapra lano akol avinisenu, literally kapara means to wipe off. So therefore that's why the mizrachim are called kforei zahav, because they're used to wipe off the remainder of the blood from the knife. Okay.
Then
that way all the blood goes out. Yeah.
could be the hardest topic, but the main thing is hard to look what goes up.
Okay. Okay, another din. Amar of Chista, Amar of Yirmiyah Ba'aba. Hashreichit, Sorech She... By the way, Tosfos asked the question, why didn't Gemara ask? Why didn't you just take the knife and wipe it off on the body of the animal? And find you weren't okay, then I didn't understand
what
you were
asking. That's what
Okay, then I didn't understand what you were asking. So Tosfos asked, why don't you just wipe it off on the body of the animal? The Tosfos said, because, practically speaking, what are you going to have? The knife is going to get full of hair. Hair is also going to get in the way of shechting the next animal. You need the knife to be clean for a proper shechita, right? Okay. When the Kohen, or whoever it is, actually, because Shechita can be, Shechita carbon can be done by anybody, whoever's shechting the carbon has to place the viridin, which is the veins, into the keli. Now, not literally into the keli, that's not possible, because what we mean is, in other words, it should be held directly over the keli. So he has he's holding the keli. You have two people involved. Again, shechita, you have one person shechting and another kohen standing over there with the keli. He has to hold the keli directly under the animal's neck, so that once it's shechted, the blood can flow directly into the keli, rather than you're holding it over here, let's say, and the blood is going to go like that. That's not how you should do it.
The animal is standing upright.
No, the animal is not. So you have, so Rashi explains that they'd put the animal's neck into the ring. The Rambam seems to understand that they would put the animal's feet into the ring.
Okay.
Whatever it is, it's laying down. Nowadays also when they shech the animals, I think they're usually laying down.
They're laying down.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's
today.
That,
yeah.
Okay.
Wait,
they have a box and
they flip it. Okay, whatever. Right.
So, wait, how do they do it? It's laying down, then how do they catch the blood?
So it's laying down. Its neck is still a couple of feet off the floor. You hold the mizrach, and you hold the mizrach directly underneath it.
You mean that the feet are still below the back of the animal?
Huh?
When you say laying down, they don't lay it down on its back. They lay it down on its belly.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. It's manami. It was said. That's the point. In other words, the neck is still, when we say on the floor, it's not the neck is not flush with the floor. It's still a little bit above the floor. There's enough room to be able to shaft it and enough room to be able to hold the mizrach underneath.
Could be sideways.
Yeah. It's lying on its side, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
You weren't there?
No, it's not on the table.
You were never there when they shafted an animal?
The Ichman Nami, we said also a discussion of Amiroyim, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yehanan, Viridin Tzorach Shiyu Avakli. The viridin, the veins of the animal, the large veins, the jugular veins in the neck, have to be able to see the airspace of the keli. In other words, what we just said, that they have to be directly above the keli, not to the side. Okay. One minute of asking it of this. Koyan Makabel, now what if the Koyan is standing there ready to receive the blood, the Nifchasu Shulei Mizrach, and the bottom of the Mizrach breaks open, Ad Shulei Yigia Dam La'aber, before the blood reached the airspace of the keli. So you're shechting the carbon, the neck of the animal is here, the keli is here, directly below it, the blood is starting to gush in. As that happens, all of a sudden the bottom of the keli breaks off.
Oh,
so you have, the question is, do we consider that the blood, now obviously it's going to spill on the floor, the question is, do we consider that it was properly received in the keli, and then it spilled on the floor, which again we said, then you're allowed to go and collect it from the floor and sprinkle it, or do we consider that it wasn't considered, that it was caught in the keli in the first place? It's considered that it went directly from the neck onto the floor, and therefore it's possible.
Some did go in the keli, some did not.
No, but the bottom of the keli broke off. So now you don't have
it
a keli. To it never hit the bottom of the keli, because before it had a chance to hit the bottom. It broke off. Actually, you get down whatever. This is all taking place within a split second, because it doesn't take that long for blood to flow. You have, within a split second, after the blood comes out of the neck of the animal, before it has a chance to go into the airspace of the cavity. The top of the cavity is here, let's say. So while it's here, all of a sudden the bottom of the cavity breaks off. Is that blood considered to have been caught in the cavity? It's not so obvious. Listen and you'll look. Avraham Moshe, listen and you'll look, okay? What you think is obvious is not necessarily so obvious. The question is, Avraham Shein Sosa Lenuach, here you have, it's in the air, it's not going to end up landing on anything because the bottom isn't there anymore. Nevertheless, kemunach dami, can we still consider as if it landed over there? a lot, or should we consider it like it's not eventually going to land there? That's the question, basically. If the blood had come into the Aver before the bottom broke off, then there's no question. As soon as it comes into the Aver, then it's already considered that it was a shackle. Here's the top edge of the caling. If the blood came to over here, then it's kosher, even if afterwards the bottom of the caling breaks off.
The question
is, if the blood was over here at the moment when the bottom broke off.
The definition
of the aver, right, but the question is, here it's in the aver above the caling. Do we consider, basically the question is like this, when the blood is over here, above the caling, where, if the caling had stayed intact, it was going to land in here, do we already consider it, while it's in the air, above the edge of the caling, is it considered as if it already landed or not?
We define the aver of the caling.
No, again, stop. If it was in the aver of the caling, there's no question. The question is whether the aver of the caling is only the area inside it, or does it also include the area above it, where it would inevitably go into the caling?
That's the question.
Okay, well, that's the question.
Because previously, we said the aver of the caling goes...
We know the aver of the caling itself only goes till the edge, but it does include also... That's the question. Yeah. Okay.
Is it a heaping aver or a
non-heaping? Okay. Amar Leis, Rav Yochanan answers him, Tilisua. You have a Mishnah. You have a Braisa, rather, that bears on. The Braisa says as follows. The Braisa is talking about Mechatas, about water that's going to be gathered to put ashes of Paradroma in it. Now, that water has to be Mayim Chayim. It has to be water directly from a spring. So, the Braisa says, Chavis Shemunachas Tachas Azimach. So suppose you have a pipe coming down from a mountainside, let's say, and you have the water is not just dripping out of the pipe, it's coming out with a force, it's coming out with a flow like this, horizontally. And you have a chavis, you have a barrel over there, which the water is going into. Now if the barrel had been placed there for the purpose of collecting mechatas, then no problem. The problem is it wasn't. So therefore, the Braita says, Mayim Shabbasaycha, the water that's in the Chavis itself, as well as Meshabachutala, as well as any water that is, as well as the water that is outside it, the water that is above the barrel, but the water that's above the barrel but not yet landed in it, is possible for Mechatas, because once it's in the barrel or above the barrel, then it's considered. It's not part of the Mayim Chaim anymore. It's not from the original spring. On the other hand, what if you took the chavis and moved it closer to the end of the pipe so that you don't have empty space between the end of the pipe and the chavis? The chavis is directly there under the end of the pipe. Then mayim shebaseicha p'sul, and then the water that's inside the chavis is possible. V'shebachutz alach shenem, but the water that's outside of it that didn't yet land in the chavis is still kosher. So therefore, in other words, we see that this is aver shesoichel anuach. In the first case, you have over there, the water is going to be landing in the chavis, because the chavis is some distance away from the pipe, and he said that it's falling down, it's going to land at the pipe, and he said that all the water that's in the air above the chavis, which is going to end up landing in it, is already possible as soon as it left the pipe. So there you go, aver shesoichel anuach, where it's going to end up landing on the bottom over there, it's considered as if it already did.
He saw it.
Well, now when he comes.
So he saw it good.
What, you're talking about in the case of the coin?
Yeah.
Okay, but fine, he saw it. But nevertheless, now we see in that split second it broke. So the question is is that blood going to be kosher for Zrika or not? Later on, when you go collect it from the floor, is it going to be kosher for Zrika or not? So over here we see, again, the case of this water flowing out of the pipe and into the chavis. We're saying even before the water lands on the chavis, it's already possible. It's in that airspace above the chavis, it's already considered possible because it's not considered Mayim Chaim anymore.
As opposed to
when there's no airspace, then fine, only what's inside the chavis is possible. Okay, so the problem with that is, hi, Mai, what kind of comparison is that? Rav Asi is asking about a question of a mizrak where there's a hole in the bottom, where the blood is never going to land in the bottom of it. The kaposhet lay avish seifel anuach. What is he answering him from this case of the barrel, where the water is going to land in the barrel because the barrel is still intact? So what kind of comparison is that? Of course, if the water is going to land inside the barrel, then there's no question. The same way as if the blood is going to land in the Mizrach, there's no question. The point is, he's asking about when it's not going to land in the bottom of the Mizrach, because it broke open before the water ever got to the level of the Mizrach. Nothing to do with whether you knew or not. It's it. Yeah, it doesn't matter whether they saw it or not. You have to look at the facts.
The water going into the Paradigma.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not playing.
No, so it comes from a spring originally. It's flowing down a pipe. It's flowing in a pipe down from a mountain, from a spring on a mountain.
Okay. If there was no pipe, it would be fine.
No, the point isn't the pipe. The main thing is not the pipe. The main thing is that you have water flowing there into the barrel. Practically speaking, if it's flowing down from a mountainside, you're not going to have a way of collecting all of it in a barrel without it going through a pipe.
And it becomes possible because
since it's going to land in that barrel, then as soon as it leaves the pipe, it's considered to be already sort of in the reshut of the barrel.
Anyway.
What do you mean it's going to be possible anyway? If you place the barrel there, you collect water from Mayim Chaim. If you place the barrel there in order to collect water, then it would be perfectly kosher. The problem is that here you didn't. Here the barrel is just sitting there stand. You are coming now with a keli of your own to collect water for Par Adroma. What you're doing is, let's say, so again, you have the pipe ending over here. You have the barrel down over here. You're taking a cup, let's say, and putting it in between in order to catch the water as it comes out of the pipe before it comes into the barrel. And we're saying it's possible because it's average to place it under us because it's going to land.
There's no barrel underneath it.
Then, of course, it would be fine. Yeah.
Oh, and the keli that you're putting in it is?
Is a keli that you're doing specifically for Mechas.
And that doesn't make it possible.
No, why? Because you have to collect it on Katie. Yeah, now.
Right.
Not in all of my time,
right. In other words, there can't be an intermediary Katie, like the barrel.
The barrel isn't an intermediary Katie, just the opposite. You're collecting before it goes into the barrel.
Yeah, I know.
The point is, it has to be that you're collecting directly. Right, you're collecting directly from the Mayim Chaim, not that it first went into some other Katie and was about to land into some other Katie.
Right.
Anyway, again, the point is that it needs to go directly from the Mayim Chaim, from the spring, into the keli that you're putting there for the purpose of collecting water for the Par Adroma. So it can't be that it landed in some other keli. It can't be that it landed or was about to land in some other keli, and then you collect it from that. That would be possible.
You put it for this keli back in?
No, you didn't. It was two keli, one on top of the other.
Yeah. If it was about to land in a keli that was there not for the purpose of Par Adroma, and you're collecting it from the pipe before it lands in that keli, we're saying it will be possible. Because you're collecting it from a place where it's not part of the Mayim anymore. Okay. I don't understand what comparison to a mixer is. Because it was going to land in the barrel. It was going to land into the barrel. Therefore, it's considered as if it already landed in the barrel. If it already landed in the barrel, it would be possible. Therefore, if it's about to land in the barrel, it's also considered possible. That's what we're saying. It's in the air, but it's going to land in that barrel because the barrel is directly underneath it, and already now it's considered possible. So there's your answer. Is keilu not. The only problem the Gemara has is that the barrel is still intact, and therefore, of course, the water is going to land in there, whereas the mizrach is not intact. And so what's the comparison? The answer is tauti kabayinet. As a matter of fact, Rav Asi was not just asking one question. He was asking two questions. Number one, the question, first of all, is like this. A, if the mizrach is intact, then is it okay? And two, im timtaloyimah ava she'en sofa l'nuach lav k'monach dami. The first question was, if the mizrach breaks. Then the second question is, if you're going to say, im timtaloyimah ava she'en sofa l'nuach, that when it's in the air, and it's not going to end up landing at the bottom of the keli, because the bottom of the keli is missing at this point, and you're going to say, in that case, lav k'monach dami, that it's not considered as if it already landed there, therefore, in other words, this blood would be possible if it landed on the floor, and you collect it up, and you scoop it up from there, well then, you can ask another question. What about when you have something in the air where it is going to end up landing over there? Like in this case, over here, in the braisa over here, concerning the water for the Par Adroma. And by the way, I mean, this kind of thing of avish asofel anuach comes up in various other places in halacha also. It comes up in connection with Hilchos Shabbos. When you throw something, whether it's considered that it landed or not, it comes up in connection with Hilchos Gittin. If a husband throws a get to his wife and it's about to land, it's considered as if it already landed,
What exactly do you mean by sefer
lamlach? Sefer lamlach means that under the normal course of events, it will. Under the normal course of events, if nothing else intervenes, then it's going to land there. So over here, that's how it is with the barrel, for example. As long as the barrel is there, the natural course of events is the water is going to flow and pipe into it. Yeah.
Even if there's a hole?
No, if there are not. Again, Rav Asi is asking two questions. A, if there's a hole, is it considered as if it already landed in there once it was above the airspace? And because when it first got into that airspace, there was no hole. When it first got not into the airspace of the Kaylee, but the air above the Kaylee, there was no hole. Number two, if you're going to say that's not considered as if it landed, what about if the Kaylee is still intact? Is it considered as if it landed already when it's still in there? So two related questions.
During the time it was intact, and of course after it was not.
Well, first we're asking about if it wasn't, and then we're asking about what if it still is. Yeah. Okay, fine. Rav Yosef, so you see, it's not so simple as you were thinking at the beginning. Okay. Rav Yosef Masni, and by the way, since we have the usual rule that I'm usually passing like infant polonaise, since the Gemara is saying that the second question about when the Kaylee is intact depends on the first one, then that means that it depends on us saying that in the first case it's not Kamunah Sami, then the Rambam duly passed like that. That if the Mizrach broke before the blood came into its airspace, then the blood and the blood will be awful. Because it was above a Kaylee when it first came out of the neck, it was above a Kaylee, which is not going to be able to receive it.
Oh, but if it...
No, in other words, well, I should say not when it first came out of the neck, but before it got into the actual airspace of the Kaylee became unsuitable to receive it, because it broke open.
Let me ask you a question. Didn't you learn some way that you could receive the body of Shaitar?
Huh?
No?
It has to be a Klisharis. Klisharis, it's made out of metal.
No, simple Shaitar.
Simple Shaitar, you don't have to receive the blood at all. You can do whatever you want with it. You can let it just gush onto the ground. Okay. Rav Yosef Masniha. Rav Yosef rather learned the discussion as follows. Learned the question and the answer as follows. Rav Kahana Masniha. This is how Rav Yosef learned the discussion. Rav Kahana Masni. Rav Kahana learned it as follows. Chavis Bomine, Toshet LeChavis, that Rav Asi had asked a question about a Chavis, about the case involving, he didn't know this Braisa, so he asked him, if you have a Chavis sitting under the pipe with water coming down from the mountain, would the water that's above the Chavis be possible or not? Or Toshet LeChavis, and he answered him by quoting him this Braisa. Rabba Masni, Rabba learned yet another way, Chavis Bamine, that Rav Asi had asked the question about the Chavis, or Poshet Le Mizma. And he answered him, so the opposite of the first version that we had, Rav Yosef's version, was that Rav Asi asked about the Mizrach and the answer came from Chavis. Rabba's version is exactly the other way around. He asked about the case of Chavis, the case of Parah Adumah, and he answered him by referring to the case of the Mizrach.
But the case of the Mizrach is not
a Mizrach. No, he answered him from the Mizrach as follows, logically.
Oh.
In other words, it wasn't a question, it wasn't necessarily a question about whether the Mizrach is broken. It's a question about when as long as the Mizrach is whole. He says like this, Iyat Moida, the Mizrach, don't you have to agree, says Rabbi Yechanan to Rav Asi, according to the second version, that don't you have to agree with the Mizrach, she actually avoids Zinuk. It's impossible to have the blood getting into the Kaylee without it going across the width of the cave. Meaning, so what happens when the blood doesn't just drip down directly from the neck, it comes in a gush, it goes a little bit horizontally. So like this, now we said on Amud Aleph, the blood has to come directly from the neck. If you are going to hold that, the fact that it moves first horizontally, above the Avra of the Kaylee, you're going to consider that that's Lav Kamunach Zami, that it's not as if it already landed on the Kaylee, then you would have a problem. Because then afterwards, when it lands on the Kaylee, it's not coming directly from the neck of the fowl. It's coming from the air.
Wow.
And then it would be no good. And obviously, we know that it is good. So therefore, logically, it has to be that Avra Shasofa Lemurach, that since the blood is going to be landing in the Mizrach, because physics will get it in there, because it will go across, but then it will go horizontally, but then it will start curving downward and land into the Kaylee, and that's considered already Kamunah Zami. Therefore, logically, the same thing must be true as far as the Chavis. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a way. According to this version, according to Rabbi...
I know the price, but I'm asking
No, according to Rabbi's version, he also didn't necessarily know the braisa.
Right.
But he was asking, what would be the din if there was a chavis under the pipe over there? Is the water that's about to fall into the chavis, is it kosher or not? And he answers him the same way as you have to say that the blood that's above the mizrach is kosher because it's going to land in the mizrach. The same way the water that is above the chavis, which is going to land in the chavis, is possible.
They were going from the mayan
to the chavis. Sorry. Yes. Well, from the Mayan to this, from the Mayan to the Chavis, and he was going from the neck to the Kishavis. Yeah. The point is, you see that it's not first landing in the Mizrach, it's first going through the air horizontally before it lands in the Mizrach, and yet we say the blood, and yet we say it's kosher. Therefore, that shows that Avish is close to the Nuach, that even though it's flying through the air, since it's going to land in the Mizrach, then it's kosher.
We just want to know if the air takes the bite.
That's the point. Because by the Mizrach, that's how it has to be, because there's no other way to do it. Therefore, we see that by the Chavis, the same rule must apply. What? What? It can freeze what? How is it? In the air? What is, okay.
By the way, are you implying that there's no segment of air by the Mayan?
That's what we said in the second case. We said that if you actually put the chavis directly touching the pipe, then only the water that's in the chavis would be possible, but any water that's outside of it is kosher, because then you don't have any air, then you don't have any air space above it to talk about. That's impossible. Okay. Talking more about this business about water flowing from one place to another, and then what the dinim of it are. Tanan Hassam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Parah, also in connection with the Parah Adumah. Now, again, you can have a case, you're filling up a barrel with water in order that you're going to use it for Parah Adumah. Nasan Yoda Eradloi, if the person put his hand or his foot, Oy Alei Yerokos, or vegetable leaves, which are edible, Kadesh Yavru Mayim Mochavis, and he did that in order to get the water into the Chavis. So Rashi understands that it means, again, you have a flow of water, a waterfall coming down the side of a mountain, let's say. So what the person does is he uses his hand or his foot as like a, as sort of like a dam, not sort of a receptacle, but more like a dam to redirect the water in the direction that he wants, towards the chavis. Or he uses a vegetable leaf for the same purpose. So then the Rambam understands it a little bit differently. The Rambam understands that you could have, for example, that you're taking the chavis and putting it into the water, and then like splashing with your hands or feet or whatever to get the water into the chavis. All right. Anyway, so then psulin, so then that water is possible for parah adumah. On the other hand, alei kanim v'alei agozim, but if you use leaves from reeds, which are not edible, or leaves from nut trees, which also are not edible, shader, then the water is kosher. Zach, while this is the general rule, davar makabel tumah psulin, if you use something that's makabel tumah to redirect the water, then it's possible. But if you use something that's not makabel tumah, like leaves that aren't edible, then it's kosher. Then the water is kosher.
So
food is makabel tumah because of it. Well, never mind that. The point is, there is that.
That's because of tumah, but who says that it applies to?
Well, a hand. No. We're not talking about korbanos right now. We're digressing to talk about a din. We're digressing, having talked about a din with parah adumah involving the water, how the water gets into the chavis.
Yeah.
We're mentioning another.
Where else are we going
to
talk about?
So where do we know that from? So that's the Amar of Yechon and Mishum of Yisiv Abba. Omakra, because you have the pasuk says like this, in connection with a mikveh, Ach mayan uvor mikveh mayan yiyatar. The pasuk says only a spring and a spring or pit, a collection of water, will be tar, meaning have a yosin ayde tara tehei. Meaning, the yiyatar implies havayosan, the existence of the water that makes you tahor has to be accomplished through something that itself is tahor. So if you're trying to make a mitzvah, this applies to dini mikvayos also. This is the source for the concept in Hilchos Mikvayos, that the things that you're using to get the water into the mikvah have to not be things that are makabel tumah. So this is why, for example, you have different rules as far as what materials you can use for the pipes, and that the pipes themselves shouldn't have a mokum kibul, shouldn't have a place in them where water can collect. Now you have a number of dinim that come from this idea that the havaya of a mikveh, the existence of a mikveh, has to be collected through something that's not makabel tumah. And the same thing then as far as water that's going to be used for parah adumah, which is also for being matar.
And all the materials and the part of the water is
No, no, no. So that's the thing. We didn't say it. No, well, it, the same rules, in other words, apply to a mikvah, but it's not that it has to come in straight. Again, you could have, you could use inedible leaves to direct it, but it has to be that it's coming from a mayan, right?
Materials that
do not makabel tumah include? Materials that don't makabel tumah include stone kalim, for example, inedible objects, things like leaves or whatever that aren't inedible, that are inedible, whatever.
What else?
You have a number of different things. Clay lolin, clay avon, and whatever. You have a number of different anything made from fish skin, anything that lives in the water. Yeah.
Diamonds,
I don't know if they're makabel tumah. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. Anyway. All right.
If you're making a diamond pipe, give me the scraps.
Okay. So actually, this does relate back. So actually, this isn't just an incidental thing. This does relate back to what we were saying before, because Amar Abchia, Amar Abyechanan, the Zois Emeres, what we see from this din that we just mentioned, Aver Kli Kesidam, we see from this din that the airspace of a keli is considered like the keli itself. Because again, what happens is, again, when you use your hand, for example, to direct the water in the right direction, again, the water is not just dripping off your hand, it's flowing from your hand and flowing horizontally for a bit, and then gradually curving and going down into the chavis, and we're still saying that's possible. So obviously, therefore, this again shows that aver kli kekli dami, that once it's air that was going to land in a cavity, then it's considered as if it already landed in there. So therefore, as soon as it leaves your hand, it's considered as if it was already in the cave.
It's possible because it's mekabel tumah.
That your hand is mekabel tumah, exactly. In other words, the point is, therefore, the point is that as soon as the water leaves your hand, which is mekabel tumah, it's considered as if it's already in the cave. It's considered as if literally you just picked it up with your hand and poured it into the cave. That's the point. So that's why this relates to the previous Gemara. If we were to say aver Kali is lav kli dami, then we would say it doesn't matter. Okay, it came out of your hand. Now it's in the air. The air is not a place that's makabel tumah. Then it lands into the barrel, and you're good. Who cares that you used your hand? Your hand was in an earlier stage. The fact that we are concerned about it means that aver kli kli dami, like we said before. Well, it's not so much that your hand is a kli kibble. No, you're not doing it in a. You positioned it to catch the water in it. The point is, you positioned it, and as soon as it leaves your hand, and now it's flowing on a path that's going to lead it into the keli, then it's considered as if it's already in the keli. That's what we were saying before. That aver shesoichel
l'nerach. Your hand is part of you, and you are a kabel tumah.
No, we know that. I don't think he was asking about that. The point is, in other words, that and again, on a path that's going to land into a certain cavity is considered as if it already landed in that cavity. Your hand is creating that path. As soon as it leaves your hand, it's on that path to go into the cavity. Therefore, it's considered it went directly from your hand into the cavity. We don't say that it's as if it like we don't say that it's as if it was like temporarily frozen in the air and then from the air it landed in the cavity. We don't say that. So that's another proof that aver kli kekli dami.
What happens if you blow edge against the stream of liquid?
Well, that's not soichel l'nerach, but again,
should land into the keli.
Well, so okay, so your hand, yeah, you so it's a good question.
You put water at a certain temperature, and it's not going to go down. It's freeze.
Fine, we're talking about that. Okay, but we're talking about the temperature that the water is right now.
You mean if you're shucking the behemoth out of space?
Okay, I'm a little there, a little here, but. Fine, but here we're talking about. Okay, but here you're talking about the water is flowing down from the thing, and you're putting your hand, and okay. Almalei Reb Zera Lo Chir Ba'aba, so Reb Zera asked Reb Chir Ba'aba why, V'duma B'shoisit, maybe, who says, maybe the case in the Mishnah is talking about where the water is actually dripping off your hand into the chavis, your hand created the path and now it's going like this. Maybe it's talking about that you put your hand in such a way that the water is actually dripping from your hand into the keli. Amalei, so Reb Chir Ba'aba answers him, Trada, fool. The Mishnah had said, Kadesh Yavra Mayim L'chavis Tznan. It had said, you put your hand over there in order that the water should go into the chavis. In other words, it should yavru, that it should pass into the chavis. So not that it should directly drip from your hand into the chavis. The wording of the Mishnah obviously implies that you put it in such a way that your hand is just redirecting it, not actually making it flow.
Good thing we
it's strong, it's a strong lashon to use this word shrada. Rashi translates it as shoyse bohol, which means like a fool who's too quick to talk. Well, the famous thing that the Chabad Yair has a tshuva about this, which is quoted in a number of places, where he says you sometimes find in the Gemara where the Chachamim use very harsh wording against each other like this. One answer is we're talking about that it was a Rebbe and a Talmud. When he sees that, when the Rebbe, in this case, Rebbe Abba, sees that the Talmud is not paying attention and not focusing, then he can use sharp words on him if necessary to get him to pay attention. What is Rabbi Elkan, what? Yeah. What were you saying? Okay. Yeah, Rebbe, when he feels it's where it's appropriate, it's not the best thing to do. But if he feels he needs to, if he in this case he told him shrada, I mean it was just a choice of bowl. I mean the fool. I'll read to you the summary of it. The Chabad Yair explains that it was customary when a Torah teacher noticed a student being lazy in his thinking, he would sometimes call him a derogatory name as a form of rebuke in order to ensure that the student would no longer be lazy in his thinking. For example, we find something where Rebbe was a famous Anov, Mishnah Mesu Rebbe Botla Anova, it says at the end of Slaita, and yet there was a time when the Chabad Yair mentions in the Struvah, there was a time when Levi asked Rebbe a question, and Rebbe answers, it seems that he has no brains in his head. What kind of a thing is that for Rebbe, the great honor, to say? Because he realized that Levi, in this case, Levi is not applying to himself, so he's not using his potential.
But
and therefore,
one second. That's because he's got a Talmud, his Talmud Mufle. You cannot say that to any Talmud.
I didn't say it was to any Talmud.
No,
here,
I'm not saying
yeah.
You said, but it's important to make the difference. Here we have a Melamed who has a Talmud Mufle. Maybe
okay.
You can say that. But to any Talmud, I doubt it very much.
Well, okay, could be.
To the yes, Talmud this way.
It's also not necessarily any Rebbe. Not necessarily any Rebbe can do that either. Yes.
I'm the first to call him Shoyta. You know you're a
Okay, let's go on over here. Okay. Let's continue over here.
No, but
okay.
It's important to make
a distinction. Yeah, it is, yeah. Fine. Onward. The Amr of Chir Ba'aba, Amr of Yishnan. Where did this Mishnah come from? This Mishnah that we just mentioned that makes a distinction whether you use your hand or foot or vegetable leaf versus an inedible leaf, that Mishnah comes on the basis of an edus that Rav Tzadik gave in front of the Chachamim. This man, as you learn in a Mishnah in Edus, Heyed Rav Tzadik, ala Zeichlin, Rav Tzadik gave edus about Zeichlin, about water that was flowing down a mountainside or whatever, Shekilchan ba'alei agozin, that you use leaves from a walnut tree to redirect them, to make them flow into where you wanted them to flow. Shehin Sherin, that such water is kosher for a mitzvah or for paraduma, as the case may be. So we see that it's not just, it wasn't a din that the Chachamim had with Kabbalah, it was something that a Tzaddik had to inform them that he had Edus, that his Rebbeim had said that. Zeho Yemaisa Ba'Oyalia, this kind of thing happened in a place called Oyalia, the case came before the Chacham in the Lishkas HaGadis, the Yechshiru, and they decided that it was kosher. So the Tzaddik is now reporting many years later to the Chachamim about this. And based on that, this Mishnah was written that distinguishes between whether you use Aliyah Gozim, which are not Makabal Toma, versus you use your hand or your foot or what have you, which are Makabal Toma. Well, I mean, we could have gone. We could try.
9:26.
Okay. I think
that's better. Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to be in the middle of something anyway.
Okay. And the next slide.